Hello and welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. I am Michael Edward Miller. The celebration of Southern literature is happening right now in Chattanooga. It's going to continue today and tomorrow, Saturday. Dorothy Allison joins us. She's one of the participating authors. Some of her best-known works are the novel Bastard Out of Carolina, which was a National Book Award finalist, also the short story collection Trash, and Allison is a member of the Fellowship of Southern Authors. Dorothy Allison, welcome to Around and About.
Oh, how wonderful to be here.
You've written award-winning novels, short stories, poetry. Is there any one particular kind of writing that you enjoy the most or identify with the most?
Oh, honey, I like to write bad poetry.
Bad poetry?
Doggerel. Doggerel is my favorite. But, you know, you push doggerel far enough and it becomes fiction.
That's a pretty good answer.
Mm-hmm.
Your novel, Bastard Out of Carolina, has been out for more than 20 years now. Last year was the 20th anniversary. It's a novel that people are still discovering, still commenting on. On Amazon.com, a very recent review said it was sad, it was funny, it was painful. There were times during the book that I wasn't sure I could continue reading, but I knew I had to. And it's a story about an abusive stepfather and a girl who's dealing with this abusive stepfather. She's got a very dysfunctional Southern family. People describe it as brutal, but they also describe it as hilarious.
Yeah.
It's a pretty interesting combination there. Why do you think people describe a story with such brutal elements as also being hilarious?
Because the book is designed that way. I think that one of the surviving traits of the working class, particularly in the South, is a completely life-saving sense of humor. And when I went to write the novel, I realized that you can tell a really hard story if you couch it in terms of a people who survive through humor and through appreciating the absurdity of life. Lord, child, the absurdity of life is the backbone of fiction.
Well, yeah, like there's one part in the novel where Bone, the protagonist, wants to be a gospel singer so badly, and she doesn't realize she's so terrible at it.
She can't sing a lick. No, it's a pity. But then most of the people I knew when I was a girl wanted to be either gospel singers or rock and roll stars, and none of them had any talent of any kind. You drink enough, you don't notice.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing that I think is really funny in the book is she starts hanging out with some gospel singers and finding out they drink quite a bit.
They do. Well, this is just based on my experience. One of the things is that when I was young, I actually did have friends whose parents ran one of the circuits, a gospel circuit, and they would manage these families that would go from revival to revival. And I went to revivals, and they were all, to a person, drunk. I could not believe it. They're up there singing about Jesus and swigging from bottles in their back pockets. It was amazing.
That really is amazing.
Yeah.
And there's one, Johnny Cash, he's mentioned at least in the novel. Did you ever actually meet Johnny Cash?
No, I just followed his life closely. And I was very fond of his wife, June Carter.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The Carter family.
Oh, the whole Carter family. Did you ever read The Devil's Dream by Lee Smith?
No, I've heard of Lee Smith, but I've not read that.
It's a novel about the early country western and gospel circuit, and it is amazing. And, you know, about half her characters are drunk all the time.
I'll definitely have to check that out. How do you actually work the transitions from funny to very brutal scenes? Because it works really well, and it's a hard thing to describe to people who haven't read the novel, the way it just kind of flows seamlessly from really funny to really dark to really funny again.
Think about your life. Think about the worst moments of your life. And I'll guarantee you the worst moment of your life will be matched by that next moment in which something so explosively funny that you're ashamed of yourself for laughing will happen. And let me introduce you to the writer's secret, white space.
Just
let the reader figure it out. Just give them a little space, and they will remember the moments in their life when that kind of thing happened automatically. I can remember being in car wrecks, standing up afterward, and just giggling at the wonder of being alive.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. White space. Just take a breath and let it happen.
That's because, like, the novel actually begins with a car accident, and the mother of the protagonist is thrown out of the car, knocked unconscious, and so the mother's just not there, basically, when the child is named.
Wakes up 3 days later and has got a baby.
Yeah.
That's a good way to do it, actually.
I guess it would be.
Assuming you survive without too much damage.
Some reviewers describe the novel as autobiographical. Would you agree with that description?
No. I will tell you that the first chapter is a retelling of everything I was ever told about my birth and my early family life. But I learned really early on that everybody in my family lies.
Oh, wow.
So it's fiction. It's just based in a lot of family stories. It did give me a way to take people that I dearly love, some of my aunts and uncles, and make them live again for just a minute on the page.
Oh, wow.
And that's the biographical element. And the other reality is that I grew up in a violent, abusive family, and I used a lot of that material, but it's not autobiography.
I've heard you were in your 40s when it was first published, and you've said that you had to be in your 40s to really get to the point where you could write it. Why is that?
Because I had to learn compassion, and I had to learn forgiveness. It wasn't my first book. I had a book of short stories and a book of poetry. But to write that particular novel, I had to learn forgiveness, and that took some time. That and enlisting a sense of humor instead of just a sense of outraged indignation. You can go a long way in Southern literature on outraged indignation. But for what I particularly wanted to do, I had to come to a place of forgiveness.
I know some writers describe the writing process as cheaper than therapy. Was writing the novel a way for you to forgive some of the people who had done things to you in the past?
The truth is I had to forgive first and then write the novel.
Really?
I know that there are people who say that writing is great therapy. I have not found that to be the case. The confrontation with the self that precedes writing is great therapy.
And you're originally from South Carolina?
Lord, child, yes.
But you live in California now.
I do. I'm a born-again Californian.
Why would a Southern writer leave the South?
Did they tell you I was a lesbian?
Yes.
Well, that's one good damn reason to move to California.
Oh, yeah. I imagine it's more liberal out there, yeah.
Just more accepting. You know, I have to say, three-quarters of my relatives were on the hill where I live are from Arkansas. I figure there's nobody left in Arkansas. They've all moved to California. In part is it's a much gentler, easier climate. We don't get snow.
True.
We rarely get temperatures above 100 in the summer, and there's a lot of wine. It's a great place to move.
In the South, I think we've become more progressive, more accepting over the last few years. At least that's the way it seems to me. Mm-hmm. Do you think it has become more tolerant, more progressive down here?
I think the world in some ways has become more tolerant and more progressive just because of the passage of time and a little bit more education. But the other thing about the South that you need to keep in mind is that the South honors an outlaw culture.
Yes.
And we celebrate it. And to a certain extent, just being in that category leads you to a state of tolerance, or can lead you to a state of tolerance. You begin to appreciate the different among you. And after a while, you realize that they're making the good dinners and providing the good whiskey and making up them songs and stories that we all need. That expands what we allow each other.
And one of the things you tackle in the book is religion. Of mm-hmm. course, religion has a lot to do with the South and what we find acceptable and not mm-hmm. acceptable down here. Do you think the South has changed in those terms religiously?
You know, I actually do, but it's very complicated. I have an enormous family. It's the one thing we produce. We don't make much money, but we produce babies by the bushels. And it simply is a Christ-haunted culture. It's odd that the Flannery O'Connor line, Christ-haunted. But it's odd to me how many of my nieces and nephews are nominally not religious, except that all their references, all their language, all of their music is based in the church, the
yes.
Baptist church mostly. So that, you know, that's the myth, that's the legendary epic that shaped them. You know, you put them in a car wreck, they're going to pray, even though they don't go to church on Sunday. Somebody gets sick, they're going to be praying. And all of the ways in which they explain the world derive from the Bible.
Do you still consider yourself a Southerner living in California?
Oh, of course. I have to fight sometimes for recognition.
Really?
But I have retained my accent, and that helps a lot.
You're just joining us. I'm talking to Dorothy Allison. She's here for the conference, or the celebration on Southern Literature. It was called the Conference on Southern Literature. I think it's really interesting. You have said that you wouldn't have started writing if it weren't for the women's liberation movement in the 1970s.
Yeah.
How did that empower you, enable you to write?
Oh, Lord. It broke the world open. It's hard to explain to people when you grow up in the particular kind of family. I mean, I'm the first person in my family to graduate from high school. The first. My mother was a waitress. My daddy was a truck driver. When I got a scholarship to college, I had cousins that would come to stare at me. As Dorothy, she's real smart, you know. That changes who you are and who you imagine yourself to be and what you can think of yourself as. It moves you into a different place. You then have to reestablish. We have to grab hold of what you really believe about yourself. I can remember the women's movement told me that I was one with all women. Now, I knew that was a lie. I knew the rich girls did not want to talk to me and were scared of me, and I was scared of them. But we began to talk about the conditions of our lives that were common. And I can remember going to you're not going to know about this, but it was a consciousness-raising meeting. We used to have these things 40 years ago.
Okay.
It's kind of like AA meetings now, but it was all female, and we were sitting in a basement, and we were all sitting there looking at each other, scared to death. And this woman sitting on the couch across from me, as different from me as I could imagine. I mean, she was wearing high heels and pearls. And she started talking about how she needed help because every night she dreamed of driving south, taking a shotgun and shooting her daddy in the head. And I knew immediately what she was talking about. And it was me, but it was a whole different version of me. And that changed everything. And suddenly I could begin to talk about those dreams I had of driving south with a shotgun. That opens the world up, and suddenly you're not alone. It did not intrinsically mean that she and I were going to easily get along, but we could do some good work together, and we could be human for each other.
When you first started writing stories like that were in your first collection, Trash, who was the audience for those?
I think I'm always writing for my sisters. I have two younger sisters, and we were, like many working poor kids, we were raised to hate ourselves. And I managed to get out. I graduated from high school. I got a scholarship to college. I took off. Both of them dropped out of high school. Both of them wound up with babies and struggle and poverty in a way that I managed to almost dodge. I felt such enormous guilt and love for them that sometimes it was writing stories to make sense out of our mutual life.
Yes.
So retelling family stories in a way that made us one together and we could be together.
Have you ever had them actually read these stories, gotten their reactions to them?
Then when my mother died was the first time they read all the stories, because I had always sent her everything I published, everything in a magazine, all the books. And when she died and we went to... When you bury in my family, you go through the drawers and find the best clothes. And I discovered in a bottom drawer all those things I had sent her for my sisters, and they had never seen them. And they spent the 3 days of the funeral reading everything I'd ever written. It meant for the first time we could use words like incest and rape and talk about our real lives instead of the grandiose fantasy of our lives that we had used to cover. It changed everything.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Dorothy Allison. Again, she's here in Chattanooga for the Celebration of Southern Literature. You've taught at many, many colleges in the nation. Where have you taught at? Long list?
I tell people I see America one small college at a time. I'm a very slow writer, and that does mean I teach a lot. I also love teaching, and it's a rich environment getting to meet young writers and hear their stories, help them make them better. So you rarely can mention a college I haven't been. It's 20, well, I think it's 30 years. I'm getting to be quite ancient.
When you're teaching, I think there are two basic approaches when you're teaching writing fiction, writing poetry. One approach is to tell the student, there is a correct way to do this, and I'm going to teach you how to do it. The other way to do it is to say, I just want to know what you're trying to do and help you do whatever you're trying to do.
That's good. But there is a third way.
Okay.
Which is to say, oh, yes, there are lots of rules and there's lots of correct ways to do it. But if you can catch me, if you can pull me into a story and pull me along, all bets are off. All rules are forsaken. Just give me a voice strong enough that I don't want to walk away or put the book down.
There's something you've said about writing. If you're trying to be safe, you've got no business writing. I really like that quote. What do you mean by that? If you're trying to be safe, you've got no business writing.
Because there is no safety in writing. I tell young writers that one of the things about writing is it's going naked in public. Even if you invent the most elaborate costume to hide yourself in. You invent a character as far from you as you can imagine. I mean, you make it a middle-aged man from Manhattan. I don't care. Your bones are going to show through. Your reader is going to know who you are. All your secret stuff is going to be there, no matter how hard you think you're hiding. Might as well let that go and be honest. Put your full self on the page. You'll still discover all these things you didn't know. The writing process is pretty relentless.
What do you do when a student comes to you and says, you know, my life has actually been really boring. I had a pretty mundane middle-class existence. I really don't think there's anything in my life to draw on.
Yeah. I've had sweet little boys come to me weeping. Nothing has ever happened to me. I have nothing to write about. Then I give them the gift that somebody gave me. Lie.
Lie.
Lie and lie big. And every now and again, take revenge. We don't honor revenge, but I was raised a Southern Baptist, and we...
Oh, yes.
I honor revenge. If somebody has messed with you, put them on the page. Put them on the page naked and mean and awful and let them stare at themselves. Half the time, they won't recognize themselves, but all their friends and relatives will, and you will have accomplished revenge. Now, you push revenge far enough, you push yourself far enough in the pursuit of it, you might get to justice.
You've been a writer in residence at several colleges. Mm-hmm. What exactly does a writer in residence do?
Sometimes it's a little bit like being a two-headed chicken.
Okay.
You show up. I was, I was at Davidson College a couple of years ago, and that's a Presbyterian college, very upscale, very upper-class institution in North Carolina. Brilliant students, wonderful students, very brave and strong. But it was like being the two-headed chicken. It was being watched constantly, and they were like trying to figure out, what makes her a writer? She drinks black coffee. Is that it? I'll drink black coffee. It's a little odd. You're at a remove from your home. You have to leave your family behind. I wasn't going to pull my kid out of high school and drag him off to North Carolina. And you have to work hard at not becoming a freak. But then Southerners know all about that.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you've talked about, your mother read Ross Macdonald.
Yeah.
And did you read Ross Macdonald as well?
I read everything she had. I was one of those children that read constantly. I read the back of cereal boxes, that famous thing we all do. But she was an enormous fan of Ross Macdonald and Mickey Spillane. She liked books, little paperback books with big men with bigger guns.
Yes.
And the trick was, when I was a girl, you could take used paperbacks and trade them. And you could get, you know, four used books, and you could get yourself a new used book. And my mama would give me all of her old ones, and I'd read them, and then I'd take them to the trade-in store. That's how I got my first James Baldwin book, was I think in trade for two Ross Macdonalds and a Mickey Spillane.
Oh, wow.
Think about that. Flannery O'Connor, I think I got her from something called the Gunrunner series that my mama had.
Well, for people who aren't familiar with Ross Macdonald, he was one of those hard-boiled crime writers, but he was kind of revolutionary in that he really made his characters more human, more in-depth, less stereotypical than a lot of the hard-boiled authors. And that's something I can definitely see in your writing as well, you know, not just Southern stereotypes, but really making them human. Do you think Macdonald influenced you in any way?
I do, but I also think it's another thing. If you've read Ross Macdonald, you read him now, just amazing language. He was in love with language, so it's a very lyrical, hard-boiled hero kind of fiction. And I remember that. Was it The Angry Lemon Sky? Things, you know, those were his titles. But he really played with language. He had great dialogue.
You're a Southerner, the Southern writer. One of the things that they're talking about at the conference is what is Southern these days? What do you think? The South has definitely changed, but what do you think has changed exactly?
Lord, everything and nothing. It's amazing to me, but that's been true my whole life, and I'm getting on now. My kid is now 20 and in college. The things that have changed in the South are almost overwhelming, both in terms of class and race and, well, I don't think it's changed that much in terms of poverty. We're again in a new poverty age.
Yes.
But the steady importance of family, of ties to the land, of a sense of place and the importance of place, that's held strong. And that's, in many ways, the way we do it in the South is unique. I mean, Yankees are kind of, you know, they remember their railroad stacks and their thick auto-driven climates. But you talk to people about the South, and we talk about smell and taste. And that continues. No, I get off a plane in Atlanta or Chattanooga, I take a deep breath and I start crying because it smells right. I mean, I love California. Don't get me wrong. I live in a redwood forest. There's nothing wrong with that. But it don't smell right. It doesn't smell like the place I grew up. That has not changed. That scent of salt and butter and shame.
Is there anything you're working on writing-wise right now you'd like to talk about?
I'd like to talk about finishing this novel.
Okay.
It takes me about a decade to write a book, and it's kind of embarrassing. I'm very slow, as I said, and this is a big, complicated book. I'm almost done. But I've been telling people I'm almost done for at least two of these conferences, and they only happen every other year, so it's a little embarrassing, but I am almost done.
I've heard the title of the book is She Who?
Yeah.
Is that still the title?
It still is. I haven't changed that. I changed a bunch of other stuff. It's about three different women. One is a mother-daughter pair. The daughter is attacked and thrown off a parking garage in San Francisco. Her mother becomes an anti-violence organizer and a major colossal pain in the ass. And the daughter, to get away from the mother, runs up the coast to stay at this goat farm. It's run by this ex-Marinole nun who was a survivor of a massacre in El Salvador.
Oh, wow.
I think that's complicated enough.
Yeah, that sounds...
Yeah.
But, well, I mean, I wouldn't say it's embarrassing to take a long time to write a book. I think one reason why a lot of bad books get written is because writers feel this pressure just constantly churn out the next thing, so they...
It's true.
Yeah.
People drag themselves to my front door, knock on the door, and say, where is the book? You read from it in Cincinnati 7 years ago, and I really want to know what happened. Sometimes I sit them on the porch and tell them.
Oh, wow.
Don't come looking for me.
Yeah.
I'm not home that often. I'm in Chattanooga.
Well, Dorothy Allison, thank you so much for joining us. You're here for the celebration of Southern literature. More information about that is online at southernlitalliance.org. And there is a website devoted to you. I'm not sure if it's something you officially run or not.
There's somebody runs it, and he's kind.
What is that website? It's
just dorothyallison.net. Somebody else bought dorothyallison.com many years ago and then tried to sell it to me for a whole bunch of money.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, my mama didn't raise a fool.
Yeah.
I'll just do .net. You keep .com.
Well, thank you so much, Dorothy Allison.
You're welcome.
Around and About Chattanooga is a production of WUTC with contributions by the staff and volunteers of WUTC. Find us online at wutc.org.